you tell me, you just described to me the whole business of walling, and I'd like you to go through that again now we can to record that. This is not graving by hand, is it?
No, it's machine cutting turbs, which was cut and laid on the existing peat in squares from the machine. These had to be picked up and built in a wall style along the chain, the length of the chain where the machine was working at the side of the cutting.
Did the machine cut it?
Cut it, yeah. And laid them.
So the machine laid it up onto the side, did it?
Well, it cut it out of the ground and laid it clear from where it had cut it at the side, on the edges, what hadn't been cut, on the area adjacent to where they'd cut it. They left room to stack what they'd cut adjacent to the cutting area, you know, like you did with the graving. You've got to have somewhere to put it when you've cut it,
yeah.
Which were these in squares. Now, obviously, when they were cut and laid on the floor, these turves, they wouldn't dry out, which is, they have to get most of the moisture out before it went to the mill to process it. So these turves were built in walls. You know, they might be 2 or 3 foot high, depending on what sort of turves they were cutting. Obviously, fresh turves, when they cut, they're fairly heavy, so at that time the contractors on the moors, people who were contracted to buy fashions or whoever to do walling, a lot of men did the walling because it was fairly heavy. When you're working all bending and lifting all day, it's heavy work, and it's hot work in summer, very hot. So although women did do walling, it were most men did the walling, right? Now, after the walls had been left, the elements, for whatever, depending on the season, if they were wet and so many months, when they were cut, the drying process was proceeding. Obviously, the turves on the ground, they took longer to dry out, so the process continued where the top turves of the wall was replaced by the bottom turves. So it gives a process of even drying out. So eventually the wall had become to a time when they thought that as much moisture could have got out of them as they needed to process the peat at the mill.
So the men would build this wall. How big were the turves you were talking about?
I don't know about measurements, but you know, a bit more.
About 18 inches long.
I can't remember the measurements.
Something like that.
But they were rough. And obviously...
18 inches long by...
About 6 or 7 inches square, something like that. I can't remember the sizes. But...
And the men would put these
into
They
did the wall in then, you see.
Yeah.
They walled them. Then... they had to be re-walled.
After about...
Well, it depends
on
the season. When they were cut, if they were cut early spring, when you'd all the summer to dry them out, they might be cut late, so they go into the following year. But they knew what they wanted of the mill, and they used to inspect the chains what had been rewalled, and then they'd come and load them up, and away they go to the mill.
So the men would make the wall initially.
Yes, they made the wall, and then the women came along and rewalled them.
And rewalling is
changing the bottom turves to the top, and the top to the bottom.
So you're rebuilding the wall upside down, basically.
So you had a chain after. So you got paid by the chain. How much you'd rewalled, and that's how you got paid per chain. I forget prices. It wasn't a lot of money. It was hard work for what you did, and. You can understand what it's like on a moor on a hot summer's day when there's midges and when the turves got too dry and there's a wind on and they used to blow up in your eyes, dust to make your eyes really sore. And it's a back-breaking job because you can't stand up, you know, you're like that all day working along your chain. It's So you got piece work, so you only got paid for what you did. And very hard work, very hot work. You wanted plenty to drink. That's all you wanted to do when you were on moor was drink, because you were sweating all day. So consequently, when hot weather were on, people used to go early morning. I'd be on at 4 o'clock in the morning and get done for dinner time before it's too hot, you know what I mean, in the way. But they did stop people later on at Hatfield, they stopped people going on at certain times because they didn't always know when there was on and off, and they stopped them going on at certain times for fire risk, you know what I mean. Because fire were a very big risk on moors, so they wanted to know who were on the moor, when they were working and when they weren't working, for the fire risk, and they say. So if you stopped on too long, went too early, they'd come and tell you like. But, you know, fires were the biggest risk on moors. We've had some bad fires at moors. So that's basically what you did when you went walling and rewalling.
And when she got you all dried out then, after you'd done it, then what happened to it?
And Fison's men used to load them then into tubs onto railway. Before that day, they were all boats, ship, little pontoons, horse-drawn. But when I was on, it was track railway into tubs, load them all into tubs. And then take them to moor.
To the factory.
Yeah. Process then for horticultural, for plants and.
So the first.
But before that, it was all for bedding and what have you.
The first digging machine actually just did exactly the same as what had gone before, but it was just a mechanised way of graving.
Yeah.
So did that.
I mean, that took over the actual graving with a spade. The machine.
So, that did that mean that it was maintaining the same? You talked about how when they were graving by hand, it didn't.
Well, that eliminated the graving, then you see by hand.
Yeah.
So it cut their costs down, Parsons. So all they were paying for then was, well, they were using the digger driver and the machine, but it cut the labour force down.
But the rest of the system stayed the same.
But. Then the contract as such for outside contracting work was the walling part of it, the walling and rewalling. So.
And did that provide a lot of work for people in Thorn?
Yeah, quite a lot of people. Thorn and Hatfield, yeah, quite a few. Can't say how many, but a lot of gangs went on Thorn and Hatfield, Swinefleet, like they do on land at, separate gangs, and that went and made a living on it.
Can we talk a bit about your connection with Mr. Bunting and also the what you've talked about, the idea that Thorn Moors and Hatfield Moors belong to the people who lived here?
Well,
how did you get started with that?
His son was my age group, so we were friendly with his son. And of course he went bird nesting and whatever that we did, and we got to know his dad as we grew up. His daughters went to grammar school, they were very well educated. And there was cases where people had got caught ferreting or poaching or rights away, they'd been caught on rights aways and they'd gone to court, and Billy knew all the rights of ways, and he knew a lot of outlaw, and got a lot of people off from being prosecuted. He was like a local solicitor, helped everybody out, you know what I mean? If people were wrongly prosecuted, I'm not saying they were always within the law, but there's sometimes, well, for instance, Riverbourne, that used to put wires up and blocking rights away. When the government brought out the act where every footpath had to be registered and that, remapped. Farmers used to be ploughing footpaths up, and river boards used to be blocking banks off because. So they didn't go on on the new map, so they eliminated people walking on their land. They didn't want people walking on footpaths and bunting while they knew every footpath there was.
Can you tell me a bit about him? What was he like?
What were he like? Shall I tell you? It tells you exactly what he was. You must have read this. Thornmoor's William Bunting.
And you're reading from Catherine Caulfield's book.
Yeah, but I know this anyway. But it's perfect, that, because he's a naturalist, a pamphleteer, archivist, a rebel, a bad-tempered old sod, and mainly inspiration. That describes him perfectly. Perfect. And he didn't suffer fools, did William, at all. That's one thing he didn't suffer fools. Took him straight down and to earth. They knew him straight away. They didn't tangle with him no more, you know what I mean? They tried to pull a wool over his eyes, they only did it once. And we got to know him that way, you know. We met him on moors when we were out shooting and that, you know. And he'd call us and say, hey, we've got some work to do. We've got that such and such a dam to do. We can see what's happening. You know, the drain all moors, you'll know, duck shooting, you know what I mean? He used to. He always said he'd answer. And so we got pally with him, and that's how we got working for him and that then, you know what I mean?
Did he have a lot, did he generate a lot of support that time in the village?
In certain quarters, I mean, a lot of people, as you say, they didn't know Moors, even locals, you know what I mean? And they thought, well, he was a bit of a crank and eccentric, but in a lot of cases he was. But as I say, with inspiration, he knew exactly what he was doing, and he could see the damage Pisons were doing, and they were going to destroy them all completely. And he was passionate. I mean, if you never met him, you just couldn't. That's the best as I can explain it to him. He was a very learned man, very, very intelligent man. And if he wanted to find out how, he wouldn't rest until he'd gone through all records, record offices, digging in libraries, digging every scrap of information out, you know what I mean? Once he got his teeth into something, he'd had to go full term until he eliminated every scrap of the evidence and that, you know. I mean, for instance, one day we went, he used to send his lad around here every week with a letter what we're going to do. Be down Moors at such and such a place, such and such a time, we're going to do so and so. And his lad used to run round with letters to people, what they're going to do, you know, just to scribble on them. Anyway, one week we went down, I said to mate who we used to go shooting with, Bill wants us to go down so and so on such and such a day. Oh no, we'll miss it this week, we'll go shooting. We're not doing the work this week, we're off shooting. So off we went with his guns and that. And guess what, we run into him, didn't they? They were coming off. And he'd been, there all about 40, 50 of them. We run straight smack into him. And we told him we were going to go and help him that week. We were twagging it one week, like, you know, we're off shooting. We run straight into him, didn't we? Well, he stripped us down, called us all idle buggers under the sun in front of everybody, you know what I mean? He should have been off with his shooting, should have been coming here working with me. He said you were coming, and he ripped us to pieces. We stood there like two bad lads. But that's how he was, you see. And then next week, oh, we're forgiven, and off we went with him again, and that, you know what I mean? But that's how he was, you see. Straight to the bone, you know, he didn't mess about. You idle bugger, you said you were coming. You've sneaked off bloody shooting. Like two bad school lads. We were like that with everybody, no matter whether you were judge whatever or counsellor whatever, he didn't mess about. In fact, they were ignorant to a lot of people, but that was his way. But he were a kind man when you got to know him and that. But he'd help anybody. They tried to, you know, try to degrade him, make a fool of him. There's not many do that. Even barristers, if you read this book here, barristers in court, and they're just ripped to pieces. Once they made a mistake, that were it. They never tangled with him no more.
You talked about the work you did for him, and you've already mentioned about blocking up
damming,
drains.
Damming, yeah. It was good. Go down there with plastic bags, and we used to cut branches off a silver birch and stake them into the drainage ditches we were blocking. Then we used to dig bags of clay, under the peat, it's clay base. We used to collect as much clay as we could and fill the bags up and drop them down side of sticks and build them up then with bags, bag after bag, and then we used to cover them with peat and dam them up, stop the water running. Here's my better half.
Hello.